Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we will have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited to have Richard Barrett with us. And we're going to be talking about the evolution of human values in business. Let me introduce Richard. He is an author, speaker, and internationally recognized thought leader on the evolution of values in business and society. He's also the founder and chairman of the Barrett Value Center, a fellow of the World Business Academy, and former values coordinator at the World Bank. Richard is the creator of the internationally recognized cultural transformation tools, which have been used to support more than 6,000 organizations on their transformational journeys. To date, more than 5,000 people, consultants, have been trained by the Barrett Value Center to use these tools in over 50 countries. Richard has been a visiting lecturer at the Consulting and Coaching for Change Leadership course at the University of Oxford and the HEC in Paris. He has also been an adjunct professor at the Royal Rhodes University, the Institute for Values-Based Leadership, and a visiting lecturer at the One Planet MBA at Exeter University. He is also the author of many, many books, most recently, The Values-Driven Organization, Cultural Health and Employee Well-Being as a Pathway to Sustainable Performance, A New Psychology of Human Well-Being, an exploration of the influence of ego-dynamics on mental and physical health, and many, many, many other books. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. In fact, I just want to mention the book that came out last, which is unlike my other books, it's a short book. It's called Everything I Learned About Values, and actually it basically summarizes 27 years of working in this field. But anyhow, let's get on.
Wonderful. And you said you just finished a new book too, right?
Yeah,
I just finished
a new book.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Just this afternoon, I didn't finish it, but I put a period at the end of the last chapter and thought, well, this is good enough from now, and let's move on.
Wonderful.
So that book is something a little bit different. It's called Evolutionary Intelligence, The Source Code of Human Motivation. Anyhow, that's another story.
That's another story, although I can't wait. That just on the title alone, I am excited to read that. So,
thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. When will we see that book out?
Probably early next year, I imagine. Generally takes about 5 to 6 months to move it through the process.
Wonderful. We'll look forward to that then. Yeah, absolutely. So for folks who are not familiar with your work, your extensive body of work, would you be able to just give us the short version of what's most important for people to know?
Okay, so let's go back to around 25 years ago. I was working at the World Bank as a transportation engineer and suddenly realized I was bored with my career, and that when I was 17 and was deciding to go to university, I thought I heard my soul say transportation, but actually it said transformation. So I was telling this to a friend of mine recently, and she said, it sounds like you've been living a misspelled life.
Right. That's too funny.
Anyhow, most of my life I've been studying transformation, personal transformation, and cultural transformation. And so this was not a surprise. So, 25 years ago, I started on this journey of understanding personal evolution, organizational evolution, and societal evolution. And I've produced over 12 books on these topics ever since. And I've created a way of measuring the consciousness of organizations and nations by mapping their values to a model called the Seven Levels of Consciousness Model. I then set up a company to do that, and the companies have thrived very well. And we work all over the world working with organizations to help them or support their leaders in carrying out cultural transformation within the organization so they become healthier organizations and more efficient and productive and more successful. So that, in a nutshell, is what I've been up to. In more recent times, I've been focusing not just on organizational transformation. I've been focusing on deep personal transformation and also on societal transformation. And those have been some of the more recent books that I've written.
Oh, wow. Thanks for sharing that. And I think I actually last week was at a conference and heard a colleague of yours, Joni Carley, speak.
Oh, yeah, Joni. Yeah.
Joni. And she was talking about some of the cultural tools, transformation tools, and then also went through the seven levels of consciousness. And so, you know, this was, I already knew I had this, you and I were going to have this conversation. So I got a little bit of a, you know, an early introduction to the levels of consciousness based on what she was telling us.
Oh, brilliant.
And yeah. And was really fascinated by it. And I think just so listeners know, just, you know, briefly what these are all about, would it make sense to just go through each one quickly?
The seven levels of consciousness.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I built this model by taking Maslow's idea of a hierarchy of needs or a hierarchy of values and blending it with what I call Vedic philosophy, which looks at the higher levels of self-actualization. And so I came up with these seven levels model. So the first level of consciousness is about survival, and the next level is about relationships and then self-esteem. Then we move to the transformation level, which is a level about understanding who you are outside of your parental programming and cultural conditionings, coming to be more in touch with your deeper sense of self. The next level is self-actualization, where you begin to look for meaning and purpose in life. And then the next level after that is about making a difference, because once you've found a sense of meaning and purpose, you want to go out and you actualize that meaning and purpose in the world and through your work. And lastly, the last level of consciousness is really about service to humanity and the planet and to anybody actually who requires the gifts and talents that you have and that you can share with the world. So these are the seven levels. And associated with each level are values, particular values. So if I ask you what are your values, I can allocate quickly those values to levels of consciousness and tell you which levels of consciousness you're operating from. And if we have time later, I'll give you a website where your listeners can actually go online and do a personal values assessment, and 2 minutes later get a full report about what levels of consciousness they're operating from.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, we'll definitely save time for that. That would be great. And so thank you for that overview. One question I had about the seven levels is, is the goal that wherever you are is wherever you are, or is the goal that you want to move up through, you know, one through seven ideally?
Okay, so there are seven levels of consciousness, but there are also seven stages of development, seven stages of psychological development. So the seven stages of psychological development, you basically move through the seasons of your life. Mm-hmm. However, you might be at the fourth stage of development and suddenly lose in your 30s, say, and lose all your money for one reason or another and drop down to the survival level of consciousness. So there are stages of development, seven stages, and there are levels of consciousness. So,
okay.
So it doesn't mean you go back down to the survival stage of development when you lose all your money, which is the survival stage is really the 0 to 2 years old period. But mm-hmm. you go down to that level of consciousness into survival mode.
Got it. Okay. And so when we think about an organization, right, a company, an organization, and they're do organizations go through the same kinds of psychological development as well?
Well, what we do with our cultural yeah. transformation tools is we measure their actual levels of consciousness. What we do is we ask three questions. You know, what are our employees' personal values? We ask each employee what values you see in the company, what values you'd like to see in the company. So we have personal values, current culture, and desired culture. And then we look at the differences. We add them all up and find out which are the most important values, the ones that got the most votes, and which levels of consciousness they're at. And this allows us to do a very detailed diagnostic of what's working and not working in the organization as far as employees' needs are concerned. Mm-hmm. So in an organization, we normally work at the consciousness levels rather than, and with individuals, with leaders, we work at the stages of psychological development. So if you want to do a leadership values assessment, we can find out what values the leader has by asking him, what are your top 10 values? But then we can ask 15 people that the leader works with, what values do you see in this leader? And the result actually gives us a sense of what stage of psychological development that leader is operating from.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. And so in an organization, do we need organizations? One thing I was curious about is, do we need organizations at all these different levels, all seven levels of consciousness?
Well, okay, so what is a high-performing what does a high-performing organization look like in terms of levels of consciousness? Well, the answer to that question is what I call full spectrum. In other words, when we look at the top 10 values that employees see in an organization, what we want to see are positive values at every level of consciousness. In other words, a spread of values across every. So the organization can basically handle any situation that comes up. That's ideally what we're looking for. It rarely happens in practice, but it's more or less the ideal.
Okay, that makes sense. Right. So then it gives you that organization has a lot of flexibility and resilience to handle whatever happens.
Yes.
Right. And they can come from all these different levels.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You got it.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating, right? Because often when we see things like this, you know, we think, oh, hierarchy, we need the, you know, the goal is to get to seven, but it sounds like that's not necessarily the case. The goal is to be good at all of these, right? Yeah.
No, because an organization that operates from levels 5, 6, and 7, which is about finding meaning and purpose, making a difference and service, is usually some sort of not-for-profit organization that is doing good in the world. And when you look at that's the current culture. When you look at the desired culture, all the values are down at the bottom. They want to get organized. They want to
Right.
And so, yeah. And usually with for-profit organizations, it's the other way around. They're very focused on making money at the survival level, of having good relationships with their employees and their customers at level 2, and also being very efficient and productive at level 3. But when it comes to the higher levels, they're not quite so good at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that. That really helps clarify it, I think. We're going to actually take a quick break right now. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And when we come back from the break, we're going to continue this really interesting deep dive into what it means to think about your organization at different levels of consciousness. Stay tuned.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Self-control begins with noticing how different feelings present themselves in your body. When you're feeling sensitive, for example, your chin might quiver, tears might well up in your eyes, and your voice might catch in your throat. Anger, on the other hand, might appear as tension in your jaw, back, or arms, along with clenched fists, heat in the upper torso, scowling, and a strong desire to yell. The more aware you become of your body cues, the easier it will be to recognize when you're on the road to disaster. Choose the emotions that cause you problems, then start noticing and logging the body cues that come with them.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com. That's empoweringnrg.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance. I'm Claudette Rowley, and with my guest today is Richard Barrett. For those of you just joining us, he is a very prolific author and the founder of the Barrett Value Center. And we're talking about the evolution of human values in business today, and had just been taking a deep dive into the 7 levels of consciousness in organizations. Richard, one other question I had for you on this was, and you were just giving us an overview of how important it is, you know, for organizations ideally to be have some skill at all of these 7 levels, right? Survival, mm-hmm. relationship, self-esteem, transformation, internal cohesion, making a difference, and service. So if an organization's a for-profit company, right, and they're maybe in levels 1, 2, or 3, let's say, right, and they are interested though in gaining more efficacy, you know, maybe they want to do more transformation internally. They're really, intrigued by this idea of making a difference. How can they start to, in addition, I know you have a survey, everybody, that they can take, which will give them information, but how can they start to evolve in a conscious way?
Well, I think the key here is the willingness of the leaders to look at themselves and say, the culture of an organization is the reflection of my consciousness. Let me say that again. The culture of an organization is a reflection of the consciousness of the leaders. And if you want to change the culture, you either change the leaders or the leaders have to change. Mm-hmm. And so cultural transformation actually is built on personal transformation of the leaders. That's the key. If the leader is not willing to look at his or her own beliefs and behaviors and values, then nothing is going to change. And so that's the key to the whole idea of cultural transformation. After that, once the leader says, okay, yeah, I seen the enemy is me, then we can start.
Because I'm sure they all put it that way, right?
No, they don't. We can start to measure and map the consciousness of the organization using our cultural transformation tools. That gives us a baseline from which to measure every year how things have improved or got worse. And one of the key factors we measure is something called cultural entropy, is the degree of dysfunction in the organization due to limiting values such as bureaucracy, internal competition, blame, hierarchy, etc. And so when those values show up in the top 10 of the current culture, based on the employee survey, we know the cultural entropy is going to be high. So the key is, these are all fear-based values or limiting values. So the key is to reduce the proportion of fear-based values and to increase the proportion of positive values in the organization. So each year when we repeat this survey, the first thing that the leader will look at usually is, has cultural entropy gone down or has it gone up? Because every time cultural entropy goes down, employee engagement goes up, profit goes up, and every other positive indicator improves as cultural entropy decreases.
Absolutely. So important. And I think cultural entropy, which I have heard of also, but in the organizations I go into, I do not hear people using that word. when I go in as a consultant, right?
Yeah, so it's a word I invented.
Oh, well, there you go. We'll help spread it. But the because I love what you're saying about entropy goes down, profit goes up, engagement goes up, right? All of these things that you want to see increase, you know, do. Yeah. So there's something incredibly valuable about that. Yeah.
So having cultural entropy on your dashboard as, you know, and the objective of reducing cultural entropy is very important. And now you can do these surveys every 6 months or every year. As I say, some organization we've been working with for 12 or 15 years now, and we see the journey to increased income and increased profitability absolutely linked to the level of cultural entropy in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So this cultural consciousness, like as you were saying, is really a reflection of the leader's ability to change, right? If an organization is going to become more conscious. I was curious if you've seen such, and I completely agree with that, this piece about the leader and their ability to reflect and change. Have you also seen instances too where there was more of a grassroots ground up pressure on the leader? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know what you're saying. And that can happen. But what happens more frequently is, let's say you have a large organization. I have an example in mind. It's one of the state governments in Canada. And so 50 or 60,000 people, various departments. One of the departments, the leader of one of the departments, gets the whole idea that I've been talking to you about and says, let's embrace this idea. And what happens is that department becomes more productive, more efficient, and then all the other departments look at it and go, my God, what's going on there? You're getting such high scores in the employee engagement survey. Why is that? The same thing happened with one of the global accounting firm operating in, I don't know, I think 30 or 40 different countries. One particular country which had adopted our tools and measuring their consciousness suddenly went up from like number 27 in terms of profitability up to number 2. And they said, oh my God, what are they doing? And then of course they adopted this whole idea throughout the organization. So that's generally speaking what happens in larger organizations. The whole organization may not take this on immediately, but you go basically where the energy is. And so you've got a leader who gets this idea, then, you know, you can see that transformation happening in that department or even in that team, basically.
Yeah, and I can really see that, right? It's sort of, you know, someone sees another department being really successful, now they're interested, right? Even if they haven't resisted before. Yeah, it just spreads that way, right? So sometimes there can be great value to starting in one spot, starting with one department.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And so leaders, it's interesting, you know, with leaders thinking through, I'm thinking about a client I'm working with right now, and I've seen what you're describing of the leader. This particular leader has been really willing to grow and to see where he needed to, you know, shore up some things and to see where he was inadvertently, of course, not setting the direction he needed to set in the organization. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've noticed about it is it's a cultural transformation project, is how much he's doing a great job with it. And I can tell it's stressful for him, right? It's taking a lot out of him because he's having to respond to things in the company, right? You've seen this 100 times, right? And he's also having to think, I think, about his own, right? His own growth and how does he need to be and role model.
Yep.
And has that been your experience? That for leaders, it can be taxing temporarily.
It's scary.
Yeah.
You know, I got here to the top of this pile in this company because of one way of working, and now I'm realizing that actually what got me here won't get me much further because I've got to be different.
Right.
And so, primarily it's scary because you have to let go of fears which you have at the first three levels of consciousness, like we all do, we all have them. but it inhibits progress if you behave in a manner which gives license to these fears. So, you know, if you blame others, that's going to reduce the cohesion in the organization. So what you're looking for is to be able to overcome your personal fears and therefore improve your behavior so that it's reflected in the way that the organization operates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. When I was thinking about our show today, one question that came up for me, and I'm asking a lot of people this right now because I'm so curious about it, and that is, you know, we all know culture is a hot topic right now, right? You've been in the culture space, I know, a really, really long time working with companies. So from your perspective of having been in the field a long time and then seeing where we are now, what has caused this energetic quickening, so to speak, around culture? What have you noticed?
Well, yes, we started 25 years ago when nobody was interested in culture and values. And
that must have been an uphill battle, right?
Oh, yeah. The first few years were kind of like, a lot of proselytizing going on and convincing people. I was writing about this stuff. My first book, my second book, Liberating the Corporate Soul, came out in 1998, actually. That's 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what's happened is that in the last 4 or 5 years, some of the leading companies in the accounting space, companies like Ernst & Young and other major global players, have been doing research and have found that when there is a cohesive culture, the results of the organization are much stronger. The organization is much more profitable. Mm-hmm. And so what has been happening is, in fact, several of these firms have published in the last 2 or 3 years research into this field, in this area, and that has got everybody's attention. Mm-hmm. Now, as I say, I was talking about this 20 odd years ago. Now, the point is that so there is this growing recognition that culture is the pathway to successful performance. And within that idea of culture being the successful pathway is the idea that employee well-being actually is the key to good culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, my latest book on that topic, Values-Driven Organization, in the byline, I emphasize cultural health and employee well-being as a pathway to sustainable performance, because it's really all about satisfying the needs of your employees. You want mm-hmm. them to feel committed. You want them to come to work each day excited. You want them to spend their discretionary energy on their work. I mean, everybody has so much energy every day, and you know, a lot of people go to work, they're there at 9, they leave at 5, and that's it. And mm-hmm. the rest of their energy, that's the discretionary energy, is used up in all sorts of other things. And even maybe during the day, they spend the time on the computer planning their next holiday. Now, we want that discretionary energy. When that discretionary energy is actually focused on work, that's mm-hmm. great, because what the people involved are excited about the work they're doing. They're finding meaning and purpose, and therefore they're going to be more productive and more efficient employees. They're going to be more innovative. They're going to be more creative. And so the key to cultural success is focusing on the well-being of your employees, cultural health and employee well-being.
Absolutely. And let's take a quick break, and then I'd love to dive into this a little bit more. So I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. And when we come back, Richard and I are going to talk. I'd love to ask Richard more questions about this employee well-being aspect of culture. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. My goal is to help you to reach your goal. And this is a tip with purpose. Everybody wants it and nobody has enough of it. But it comes to a point that you have to tell yourself, I can get more. I want more. I deserve more. I'm talking about money. More money, more money, more money. That's what people want. But what has to be done? Your thoughts have to change. That you can allow yourself to tell yourself, I have money and I want more money. How much money? What is it? Put it out there. Write it down. What would you do with more money? How would you feel to have more money? I hope this tip helps you going through the day today. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Join Jennifer Noelle Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on transformationtalkradio.com. You'll take a quantum journey as we reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit JenniferNoelleTaylor.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, our guest today is Richard Barrett, who is an author, speaker, and the founder of the Barrett Values Center. And we have been talking about, oh my gosh, the evolution of human values in business, the seven levels of consciousness. Richard, we've covered a lot already, haven't we?
Yes, we have. More to come.
Absolutely. So one, before we dive back in, I just wanted to ask if you would be willing to share with listeners, you know, the best way for them to get in touch with you, how they can learn about your books. You mentioned a survey they could take.
Yeah.
How should they do that? Yeah.
The quickest way to get in, is www.richardbarrett.net, RichardBarrett.net. And that's part of the Values Center website. So that's www.values, plural, center, spelled the English way, CENTRE.com. So on my on the richardbarrett.net website, you'll find my publications, my 12 books, how to get them. You'll find lots of videos of me talking about personal and cultural transformation. You'll find lots of radio shows like the one we're doing today. And you'll find blogs and articles and a lot of free information. Now, one of the things that you can do is if you go to www.valuecenter.com/PVA, that's Peter Vehicle Assessment, Personal Values Assessment, actually. valuecenter.com/PVA, you can do your own personal assessment. You pick out 10 values that are the most important to you and you pop them in. You can do it in like 5 minutes. And then you, 2 minutes later, you'll get a full report showing what levels of consciousness you're operating from and a description about your character. And most people, when they get the report, go, oh my God, that really is me. And basically, it all works on some sort of algorithm that we put together. But anyhow, that's available to you free of charge. And actually, in many companies, they use that. You can use it in your team just to have, and then bring everybody brings their results, see what values they're operating with or what levels of consciousness they're operating from. You can do it and your spouse can do it. Find out whether you're actually compatible. You can do it in the family. I mean, there are lots of different ways that people use this. In fact, over 600,000 people have done this in the last 3 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a very popular free assessment.
I'm actually excited to take it now that I know about it.
One more thing. As of last week, we produced a free online values learning system, which is linked to the personal values assessment. So you can spend half an hour learning about values and then use that information to actually look at your results from the personal values assessment and get more depth and more out of those results.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing all those resources and ways for people to find out more about your work. Mm-hmm. And this assessment sounds wonderful. Mm. So one thing we were, right before the break, we're talking about was this idea of, you know, culture is the pathway to success, to a successful organization. And then you were talking about employee well-being. I'm paraphrasing here, of course. Employee well-being is really a pathway to a good culture. When employees are excited and have meaning and purpose, right, they're excited to get up and go to work and give that kind of energy to what they're doing. And what, you know, when we think about employee well-being, and I know that can mean a lot because I'll sometimes hear it like stress reduction, exercising well, which are all parts of well-being. But how do you define employee well-being in this context?
See, well-being, your level, your well-being depends on your ability to meet the needs of the stage of psychological development you're at. Okay. Now, the stages of psychological development vary with age. So somebody in their mid-20s to late 30s is at the individuating stage of psychological development. That is the fourth stage. And what is important to somebody at that stage of development is to have the possibility, freedom and autonomy to explore who they are, make mistakes, and learn what they're good at and what they're not good at. So employees in that age range are looking for this sense of freedom, autonomy, and accountability for their work and their results. Mm. You move now into the 40s, and this moves in. Now we're into the self-actualization stage of development, which is all about finding meaning and purpose. And so what's happening here is you're looking to do work that excites you because it resonates at the deep level of your soul with what your innate gifts and talents. Mm-hmm. And so you're really interested in this meaning and purpose. From my own example, I was in my mid-40s when I realized I was at the World Bank as a transportation engineer, as I mentioned, and I realized I was totally bored with my career, and I realized that I spent most of my adult years studying transformation and not transportation. And so I had to figure out how to shift my career into a whole new direction. It took me 5 or 6 years before I left the World Bank and figured that out. But once I'd done that, and that was over 21 years ago, I was in a whole new way of being, which has brought me so much fulfillment in my life and continues to do so now. And so I'm doing the work now that I was born to do. And so that's the self-actualization stage. And in the 50s, mm-hmm. something changes slightly. We've discovered what we love to do, and now we want to make a difference doing that work. And we want to actualize our sense of meaning and purpose. And to do that, we must be able to connect with other people. If you can't connect, if you don't have good emotional skills and social skills, you can't connect, and therefore you can't make a difference. So that in the 50s is all about connecting to make a difference. Now, interestingly, you know, men are not so good as that as women are, because boys at the second stage of development, conforming between 2 and 8 years old, this is where we learn about relationships, and boys are told, be strong, don't show your feelings, et cetera, et cetera. So we close down.
Right.
And then when it comes to our 50s, we don't have the skills to connect with other people. Interestingly, in one of my other books, I link all of the these stages of development to leading causes of death. And in my new Psychology of Human Wellbeing. And for men, the biggest danger is their 50s, because a failure to connect and make a difference leads actually to prostate cancer. It's very fascinating. Whereas with women, it's the previous stage which is difficult, because in the self-actualizing stage, women in their 40s generally have a spouse, children, and aging parents. And guess who's the last person they focus on? Themselves. And so they find it difficult to fully express who they are. Now, this coincides with the this stage of development coincides with the fifth chakra in the human body, which is the upper chest and throat. And so this is the period when breast cancer becomes a major threat, and it's caused by the inability to self-express, because you're always putting your needs or your soul's needs last. Anyhow, that's another dimension of the work that I do, but it is linked to well-being. And then finally, in the serving stage, this is when you get to your 60s generally, you want to be of service to the world, but the way that you do that is by making a contribution, by taking your gifts and talents and contributing to the well-being of society, the planet, or even just to the well-being of another person. So this, the answer to the question, how do you motivate your employees, depends on what stage of psychological development they're at. There isn't one thing for all. I mean, when you've got employees at the lower stages of development, the first three stages, you know, you can entice them to do well by giving them more money. That really improves their survival conditions. But when you get to the upper stages of development, that has less meaning and purpose for them. They're interested in the deeper satisfactions of their expressing their soul talents.
Now, this is really helpful, because I was just thinking the same thing you expressed there at the end about how much when we're motivating people or trying to keep them engaged or helping them understand, you know, what's important to them if they're not sure. It is really looking at where they are, right, in their development, as you said, based on age and the psychological development and what your tasks are, so to speak, right, at each phase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's a whole other book I've written called Evolutionary Coaching, which actually helps coaches to figure out what stage of development their clients are at, and therefore what is most important to them at this particular stage of their life.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that, because I think this is a huge missing piece.
It is.
In absolutely missing. Yeah,
absolutely. It's like one size fits all. You know, it's like,
right?
No. There's a verticality to development which is often ignored. And let me just say one more thing. Many of these, the interest in culture has come up a lot lately. But many of the tools are what I call flatland. They basically measure how good you are at X, Y, Z, and then compare you to other companies' scores in X, Y, and Z. Well, that's ridiculous, in my opinion, because it's not developmental. It's flatland. I don't go around comparing myself to other people in order to do well. No, I compare myself to how I have been in the past and how I would like to be in the future. And so, you know, these cultural tools which operate in flatland are really not doing the job.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Absolutely. I've certainly seen examples of it. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, Richard and I are going to continue this really interesting conversation about what does well-being mean, you know, the developmental piece. And then finally, you know, what are some next steps organizations can take? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
Miss any shows during the week? Don't worry, we've got you covered. With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand. Yes! Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, SeattleHealingHypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Richard Barrett, today. And we had Richard been talking about the importance of, right, thinking about employee well-being based on the stage of development people are in, right? Based on their age, based on, their skills and attributes and understanding of that. And I was curious, how common is it that people are even aware in your experience that they have different stages to move through of development, psychological development?
Well, very, very few. I mean, there are models of stages of development produced by academics. But until I brought out my book, Evolutionary Coaching, with the stages of psychological development 5 years ago, there wasn't very much. I couldn't find any organizations giving any recognition whatsoever to stages of psychological development, or their employees or the leaders' stages of psychological development. Now, this whole idea of evolutionary coaching has really taken off, and my book on that topic is in really great demand by coaches all over the world. So, there is this awakening to the idea that there's much more to business success than focusing on bottom line profits. I look at it like this, your bottom line profits are the result of the causal indicators, which are in effect the way that you treat your employees and the energy that your employees bring to work. And so focusing on that, actually, then you don't have to worry about your bottom line results because they'll be great anyhow.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it all makes sense, doesn't it? If people treat employees well, employees bring energy to work, your business is going to, right, is going to evolve the way it needs to. Yeah, absolutely. And so, this piece we've talked, just circling back for a minute to something we spoke about a little bit earlier in this show, which was the importance of leaders understanding eventually their own stage of development and their own level of consciousness, right? Because it's reflected throughout the entire organization. Have you noticed that leaders, at least some leaders, right, think that they're further along in the evolutionary, their own development than they actually are? I mean, is there...
I'm laughing because it's certainly true.
Okay.
How do we figure that out? Well, we figure that out by using our leadership values assessment. You know, the leader goes online, picks 10 values about how they're operating. We allocate those to the levels of consciousness. He invites 15 people to do the same. They pick 10 values. We look at the top 10 of these 15 people about how they see the leader, and we see the distribution of those values, and they're often very different. So usually the leader assesses his values are at higher levels of consciousness than the employees' top 10 values about the leader. And so the leader is living in this la-la land of thinking that, you know, my God, I'm really so great. Whereas the perception of employees is not so great. Now, exactly the opposite can happen. So the leader scores themselves a little bit lower, and the employees score the person a little bit of higher levels of consciousness. So this is a leader who hasn't really fully accepted his or her own greatness. And, it's time for them to show up and be less humble and begin to realize that, you know, they have significant attributes which are, you know, great for the company. And then we get the leader whose top 10 values look exactly the same or very, very similar in terms of levels of consciousness to the feedback from the 15 people. And these are what I call authentic leaders. What they put out into the world is who they are is absolutely reflected by the impact that they have on other people. And these are obviously the best leaders to have, because you know what you see is what you get, and people trust these people. And so these are the three different results that we see in terms of feedback on leaders. And sometimes I've seen leaders who scored themselves at levels 4, 5, and 6, and their employees scored them at 1, 2, and 3 with high levels of personal entropy. In other words, very, very dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. But what the leader happens to do is, you know, he or she doesn't actually write down their top 10 actual values. They tend to write down their aspirational values because they don't have a critical mind to be able to look at themselves. And that's the value of getting feedback and having this type of analysis, which usually, you know, is presented to them in the form of a 2-hour coaching session. Mm-hmm. So this is a very useful way for leaders to become cognizant of how they're actually showing up in the workplace.
Yeah, how valuable, right? I mean, because I would imagine that their leaders, once they get this information and they have their 2-hour coaching session, if they can internalize it, they can really make significant changes.
Yeah, I often, when I'm doing presentations, I talk to the men in the audience and I say, I say to the whole audience, you know, what is the most fearful experience that men have? And the answer is when your wife says, we need to talk. Because they know they're going to get feedback.
Right, exactly.
Which they're not probably going to enjoy.
Most likely not, no.
But that's how we grow and develop, when we get feedback.
Exactly.
I love feedback myself. I welcome feedback because I see myself as on an evolutionary journey, and I want feedback. I want to know what's good and what's holding me back and what other people's impressions are. I have to make my mind up. If I'm getting some negative feedback, I have to make my mind up of whether it's actually justified or not, because sometimes people project onto you. When we do our leadership values assessment, we've got 15 people giving feedback. There will be one or two who are projecting, but the reason why we have 15 is because that gets pushed on one side, and we get a true appreciation of how people see someone.
Yeah, and then we just have a couple minutes left to the show, but I wanted to ask you, for listeners, I mean, you've shared the website, books, I know lots of resources, which is wonderful. And then for leaders who are listening, or anyone who's listening who's been intrigued by this, If they wanted to take a next step, what would you suggest?
Well, I think the first next step is to find out more, and that you could do that by going to my website, richardbarrett.net, or to the Value Center website, valuecenter.com. You could look up my name on Amazon and find some of my books. If you're interested in coaching, you'll find Evolutionary Coaching. If you're interested in organizational culture, then you'll find The Values of an Organization. And there are other books that I've written that you may be intrigued by. A good introduction would be the last book I published earlier this year, which is called Everything I've Learned About Values, which looks at It's a short book. You can read it on the plane in 2 hours. But it looks at personal values, organizational values, and societal values. And it provides a good overview of the whole topic of values. And we even do a two-day training on that topic. But these are some of the things that you can do. Do the personal values assessment also. Mm-hmm. That's a good way of looking at yourself and understanding who you are. So these are the, I call this getting your feet wet. So
yes.
It's like, you know, like I'm getting my feet wet, I'm looking, I'm exploring. And, then the next stage is, well, yeah, I find this very interesting. So if you're a consultant or a change agent, you might want to do our 3 or 4 day training, which is about how to use the tools. Once you've done that, you become a practitioner, so you can actually use our tools with your clients anywhere in the world. And we have our tools available in 40 or 50 different languages, so that's not a problem. And if you've got a large client, you know, in operating many countries, you know, we have all the languages necessary to carry out a cultural values assessment or leadership values assessment. So those are some of the ways that you can move forward with your understanding of the whole idea of culture and values.
Wonderful. Thank you. That was just a great way to wrap up the show for people to know all the different ways that they can engage and learn more. Richard, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Well, you're welcome.
And sharing such great information and really sharing your life's work with us. And I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in to Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had a great time. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. Have a great couple of weeks, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.